לפי רש"י, ובואו רב תפסק יוד גימל, וזו שניס תעשו, without round number two, to describe according to Rashi exactly what these psukim mean. So the pasuk says, "V'zoyis shenis tasu." This was translated loosely, based upon the mitzudos that you commit a second grave sin. Grave sin number one, it was that you have contempt for the sanctity of the mizbeach. That's that you bring on the mizbeach animals that are bali mumin, that have blemishes. There is an attitude of contempt towards the mizbeach. That's number one. Number two, you abuse your wives. And your wives come to the Beis HaMikdash and they stand around the Mizbeach and they cry bitter tears. Now, each Avera in and of itself is completely separate. Having contempt towards Korbanos is one Avera, towards the Beis HaMikdash. Number two, treating women, that this is not the Beis HaMikdash. This is just a general problem you have at home. This domestic abuse. And yet, the Pasuk puts the two together, even to the degree describing the pain of the Noshim, crying with their tears fall on the surface of the Mizbeach. These two things, these two averos of your contempt towards Hashem's service and the way you treat your wives are unified in one item, in the Mizbeach. That's a very interesting idea. How could that the common denominator of Hashem's service and your marriage comes together in the Mizbeach? Rashi says, let me read the whole pasuk. Mizos sheis tasu kasos dim es mizbach Hashem. Kasos, according to the mitzvahs, we had to translate the pasuk not literally. Tasu is because it's really the past. It's really the past tense. The event has happened in the past, but here we're describing in the future. You bring about such a reality where women come and they cover the mizbeach with tears. Es mizbach Hashem, because of the bichi va'anoka, ad kedei kach, there are so many tears on the surface of the mizbeach, me'ein oid penois el ha'mincha. There is no place left on the mizbeach to put the mincha, and v'lokachas rotzen yevchem, there's no place that is... I'm reading the pasuk, pasuk page 882, pasuk yud gimel. Paragdays, I mean the pasuk to refresh ourselves. Now let's see what it says over here in the Rashi. Rashi pasuk Yud Gimel Shinis Tasu Harishayna Shaychachti Harbehi Kasha. The Rishayna which I've given you Musar Harbehi Kasha is very very harsh. Shenasa Goya Vafiluhu Panui. A man he marries a woman who is not Jewish, even if he is not married, he's to anyone else. No, so in other words, right off the bat, Rashi is coming to disagree with the Mitzudos David. Rashi learns that we are now in new territory, in new sugya. Forget about the contempt for the Hashem service. According to the Mitzudos, the word Sheinis is a second Avera. What's the first Avera? The first Avera is contempt for the Mizbeach, the sin of offering upon the Mizbeach korbanos that are balei mumim.
We're talking about the Kohanim?
Yeah. The Kohanim, correct. So that's a very good point. So that would only apply to the Kohanim. That would not necessarily apply to the Yisraelim.
No.
But it really does go hand in hand because the tolerance and the fact that... Okay, it's a good question. According to the Mitzvah stuff, the first Avera is related uniquely to the Kohanim. And this Aver refers to the Yisraelim. So what is the word Sheinis? They're not connected. Okay, let's put that aside. But according to Rashi, that's not the shot. We're not discussing the bringing Balei Mumin on the Mizbeach. We are describing one thing only, intermarriage. So what does it mean here, Sheinis number two? Number one, there are single men who don't have a wife. And when they go to Feshaduchim, they seek out non-Jewish women instead of Jewish women.
Right.
That's number one. Number two is there are men who are already married to Jewish women and they take a second wife who is a non-Jewish woman. So the Sheinis is the people who are married. So one more time words. Sheinis Tasu. What do you mean Sheinis? Rashi is coming to answer the obvious question. Why does the Pasuk say number two? What is number one? Before you can come to number two, you have to say number one. And the answer is Harishayna is number one. Shaychachti Harbe, that I've given you that I've given you rebuke, harbe hi kasha, it is severe, a severe violation of law, shenasa goya, that men have married non-Jewish women, the afilu hu panui, even if the man is not married. So he has not betrayed his wife because he's not married. But yet, who does he marry? A non-Jewish woman. That is a very grave violation of halacha, to marry a non-Jewish woman. And I've given you enormous amount of mussar. Now we come to crime number two, v'zoy shenis, which is even worse than aver number one. Kosha mimena, shahanosui yisraelis, because there are many men among you who are married to nice, fine Jewish women, and they marry a second wife, and the second wife is not Jewish. Nasu alehen, married on top of the women that they already married to,
in addition to
the Jewish wife, es hanochrios, non-Jewish women. Lefishanis shenis pachamu yisraelis berav. Now, what's the reason why this has happened? Because he's giving us a different reason. They became black in famine, uvigoyla, and in exile due to starvation. And due to the difficulty of galus, their women, their wives, the Jewish wives, have become not beautiful in their eyes due to the conditions of poverty and famine and the difficulty. V'nisganu aleihem, the hoya moshiva beveisot tsirura, and they would leave them, they would abandon them in their home, tsirura ke'al menus chayus, what we call an aguna. We call this an aguna. But the real term for agun is a living widow. The word agun is not really not an accurate word at all. The word aguna, I forgot this. I don't remember. I remember we once learned about this.
No, it means anchored or chained.
Anchored, but no. The way the word agun is used in Chazal is not the way it's used in colloquially. It's used. It's a very inaccurate term. And today you go in the newspapers. Agunos, agunos, agunos. Very big tzara. And when you say an aguna, right away you think about a man who does not want to give a get to his wife. Okay, that's the way it's used today. But I think in Chazal, the way you find it being used in Chazal is a little bit different. It's not important for right now. But right now over here, we have a situation where we have a man that's married to a woman. He abandons her. He just abandons her. And it's called almenus chayus. And that's really what the term, a widow, a living widow, meaning that her husband is still alive, and she's trapped. She's trapped. She can't marry anyone else. There's no one else for her to marry because she's an Eishes Ish, and her husband is not supporting her, and she has all of the difficulties.
Ke almana.
Not a real almana. Ke almana, a living widow. Almanus chayus. So in a certain way, that's even worse. I mean, in one way, it's better. One way, it's worse. By Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know, there's still hope. But on the other hand, the tsar of an aguna is even worse than the tsar of an almana, because at least an almana, there's hope. She can remarry. She's free. But a woman who's an aguna is stuck. She can't go anywhere. And that's what it says over here. You've made your wives into almanus chayus. V'hanochlis choysa giveres. The non-Jewish wife was dominant. So when men are doing this, kasois dimo es mizbach Hashem, show you bois lefne mizbach Hashem. This he agrees. This the Mitzvah said, but what Rashi said, he really was quoting Rashi, that these women who were abused, who were almanus chayus, they came before the mizbach Hashem because they would cry lefanav before the mizbach, and they would say the omers, they would say mechotanu, what have we sinned? What crime did our husband see in us? Isn't it fascinating insight? Come, Mizbeach, test us. Test us, just like a soita. The halach is the woman who's unfaithful. He's giving a whole new interpretation that the Mizbeach did not touch, that a woman who is a soita, who's been unfaithful, so the husband has to take her to the Beis HaMikdash and they give her to drink from the Mei HaMorim. The Mayim HaMo'odim, the bitter waters. The Kohen, he takes the parasha of Soita, he writes on a piece of parchment, and he soaks it in water, in the Mayim Chayim, and it dissolves, and you give that to the Soita, the woman who's suspected of adultery, to drink. And then the Pasuk says that if one of two things will happen, if she is guilty, her stomach will explode.
By the way, it's interesting, in the Gemul, the Paradusa,
in Yirmiyahu, the Haftarah of the one that we say the same lashon.
Although, excellent, right. What wrong did you find in us? Excellent, exactly. Right. We complain, but what did you find in us? So here is
one thing is not clear.
Also, they left me and
they abandoned me.
They forsook me and they took,
strange gods. Strange other.
One thing is not clear. The idealistic small number of Jews who left Babel to return should have been idealistic, willing to put up with all the difficulties, giving the easy life that they had in Babel.
Who says life in Babel was so easy?
Well, that's why most didn't return.
For some, it's like in America.
The majority stayed.
Like today. Today, on the one hand, there are people here that have no plans ever to go to Eretz Yisrael. They're really stuck here. They're just like you can't even imagine. And then there are people that are very unhappy here and are running to Eretz Yisrael.
Vast majority is staying here.
It depends the community.
Here, I would have thought that these were idealistic people who were returning.
Okay. Out of town, out of town, most people run away. The religious people out of town who now live in the metropolitan area, a lot of them who are very religious, they go to Eretz Yisrael right away. They don't feel calm. They don't feel they have a place in America.
But the vast majority then, at least, were idealistic and returned.
Boston.
So I would have thought these idealistic people who returned would be good people. Instead, we're seeing
you're asking a very good question. Unfortunately,
people are not consistent. That's all.
Unfortunately, we don't really know what life was like. It's impossible to really fathom, to understand their situation. Going back 2,000 years, they were living. They were exiled. The people in Babel, most of them came there 11 years before the Churban. And they were there for over 70 years, 81 years. And now there's a call to go.
It was only the Chareish and the Masker. The vast majority came after the Korban.
There weren't so many survivors. Most of them were killed. I think 4 million people were killed. 4 million Jews were killed in the time of the Bayis Sheni. 4 million. So where did they all go?
Bayis
the survivors, Bayis Sheni.
We're talking about Bayis Rishon.
You're correct. Okay, you're correct. So then we don't really know how many died. We know that almost 1 million people died by through Nevuzar Adan in the story where he avenged the blood of Zechariah ben Yehoiakim. It says there's something like 800,000, 900,000, something like that. It says the exact number. It says the exact number that were killed. So that was just from them, and that was during the Churban. How many died after? It doesn't really say. It's not really clear how many people that you get sort of some. The numbers are varied. There's a very large spectrum, and it's not just the Churban. You have to fast forward to Beitar. Beitar was 52 years later. And there was a revolt with Bar Kokhba, yeah. And Rabbi Akiva was supporting Bar Kokhba, and the end was the Romans put down the revolt. And Chazal say Beitar, they piled up the bodies for 7 years.
Your calculator would run out of digits.
So it's really not clear at all. They don't give us numbers, and we really don't know numbers. And there are a lot of different parts of the Churban. There was this city and that city. It's a big mystery. Anything before the Bayis Sheni, we have very little, the records are very, very weak. There's no historical account. The only thing you're going to find in Nach. You'll find the Fima Mori Chazal. The Bayis Sheni, that already we have a lot. That already, historian, there's secular accounts, there's Jewish accounts. We have Josephus, and we have numerous Fima Mori Chazal. And if you want to really delve into it, you'll come away with a story. You'll come away with a lot of information. The Bayis Rishon, it's just.
But we know coming back with Ezra Nehemiah, something like 10,000 people.
Right, we know the numbers. The numbers were pathetic.
It's very small.
The numbers are pathetic. But do we understand what life was like then? Do we understand what it was like to travel? Today we take it for granted. You can just get on a plane, you can go anywhere you want in the world. If you have enough money, you can go, you go to the moon. If you have enough money, you want to be like us, you want a CEO of some...
why did so few people come back? Because the vast majority were comfortable in Babel.
We don't know that. There are different Mamori Chazal that conflict. It's a very complicated topic of why they did not come back. Ezra severely chastised them for not coming back. Severely. And yet Ezra himself didn't come back right away, okay? Ezra, who gave them Musar, Ezra didn't come back right away. Ezra had a Rebbe, Baruch ben Neviah, and he stayed there. Ezra could have been the Kohen Gadol, and he chose not to be the Kohen Gadol because he did not felt that it was not the right thing to abandon his Rebbe. It's a very complicated thing. I know someone here in Flatbush, okay, so they have parents. They have parents that are not young people, and the children decided they want to move to Lakewood. They picked themselves up and they moved to Lakewood. The parents are devastated. Mamish devastated. So, and the parents talk to me, they tell me. And they're really, really devastated. So why are the children going? I guess they I'm not to question them. They have their own children and they have to mechanech them. And they have made an assessment that this is what, unfortunately, they need to do. They need to be in Lakewood because their children, the place for their children, for their children's future, is to be where they feel to be the right place. I don't know. They talk to Rabban, they talk to psychologists, they talk to... I don't know. None of my business. But I just know from the side of the parents who are elderly people, and they need a lot of help. They need a lot of help. And it's very hard for them financially and everything. And here's their lifeline. You know, their children are here, and this is their lifeline. And the children are going. Goodbye. Sold a house. We bought a house in Lakewood. We're going for the school year. And like, what? You can't judge. We don't know. Obviously, in Babel, there were probably a lot of elderly people in Babel. And they didn't have social services. They didn't have Bikur Cholim. They didn't have government giving social security and stipends. And they had children. Children's going to go and abandon their parents? Parents couldn't make the trip. Baruch ben Neiria was a Zokain. He couldn't make the trip. He wouldn't survive one moment, one day. He had a Talmud, Ezra. Ezra said, I'm going to abandon him. It's going to go Let him just, you know, they'll come for him, they'll put him away, and who knows what they'll do with him. They'll lock him up somewhere. And Ezra is the one that's giving everyone else some Musa. Pick yourself up and go. It's not so simple, okay? Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky is a fact. People would ask him this, he can't judge today. What we would say today, no one knows. But 30 years ago, people would ask Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, should we make Aliyah? He would tell them no. He said straight out no. I know with this organization, this... I hold, you shouldn't go to make Aliyah. It's not good for your children. You're Americans, and Eretz Yisrael, again, going back 30, 40 years ago, it's a polarized society. It's either you're going to be a real Haredi to an extreme, or you're going to be a Chiloni. And you don't, here in America, for your children, there's a middle ground. There's a middle ground. You can go to the baseball game. You can go to the Yankees. You can go opening day. They can go to Great Adventures. You can go sneaking. You can go to the movies also. And you go to Shul Yom Kippur and you can dive in for the Yomid also. You're not, I don't know, I don't think it's healthy for your children to go to Eretz Yisrael 40 years ago, we're not talking about today, 40 years ago. He wasn't embarrassed to say this, he was a Gadol Hador. He says, no, I don't think you should go. As Beferish, he told people not to go. It's not yet. The time has not come. What would he say today? No one knows. No one has a right to extrapolate what he would say today. They go to the Chazonish, the only club, the Eretz Yisrael, the Medina, the Chazonish, the Briskerov. Excuse me, the Chazonish, when did he die? How many years ago did he die? How many years is it already? 60, 70 years. When did the Briskerov live? What are you talking about? You're talking about a different world. Don't tell me what the Chazonish said, a political decision to make today, make a political decision today, 70 years later from when the Chazonish left. The Chazonish left 70, the facts on the ground were very, very different. What he said then, fine. To say that it applies today, how can you say that? Okay? So I don't know, I even just heard of Rabbi Grunblatt, he writes there in his book that, Dr. Grunblatt, So he writes in his book is that when the Medina was established in 1948, Rav Baruch Be'er, there were many people who was just sitting there in a day, scratching their head, and they said, how could it be? Our Rebbe, Rav Baruch Be'er, that was my grandfather's Rebbe. Mamish, my grandfather's Rebbe Muvok, Rav Baruch Be'er Leibowitz, he's from the Mamish, the Gedolei Yisrael. He said it will never happen that there will be a Medinas Yisrael. It will never happen. And it happened! And it happened! And he was scratching his head. They were walking around. He writes there in the book, he walked around. Stunned. I remember 20 years ago, I remember clear, I was in yeshiva. It was the 50th anniversary of Medinas Yisrael. Okay, what's 23 years already? What's 22? What is it, 23? 22 or 20? So this year's how old is Israel? 73 or 72? So 72, right?
Yes.
72. 72. So it must have been 2 years ago. It must have been 22 years ago. 73. And everybody was saying, remember this Kanoi in yeshiva, real Kanoi, yeshiva Shigai, he says, the Chazonish said that the Medinas Yisrael is not going to last more than 50 years. This is the year. Yeah. This is the year of the Mapolo of Medinas Yisrael. Yeah, he was so happy. Oh, excuse me, it's 22 years later. The Medinas Yisrael is doing very well.
We seem to be fresh out of Nebuah.
Okay, it's 22 years later. I know there are infinite number of problems in Eretz Yisrael and in America and in every single country. Every single country is Molei V'Gadosh, the problems. Okay, everyone's scratching their heads in this world. But the bottom line is they have a stable government, as far as I understand. Just as stable as America. Okay, so they have a stable government. Oh, but the Chazon Ish says it's not going to be more than 50 years. I don't know, don't ask me. Okay, so the point I'm trying to make is we don't know the circumstances. We really, really do not understand their frame of mind, their mindset. They've been through a torture, they lost their family, there was a Chorban that we can't even begin to imagine what it must have been like for them. And they were in Bavel. It was if many of them first settled there, had a history of being there for 81 years. When came an announcement, Koresh says, go back home, go back to your land. When you think it's so easy to pick yourself up and go into a desert, to go into Lechtech Acharai Babir Beyeretz Loi Zerua. It's not so simple. Not so simple. We didn't have a Moshe Rabbeinu and the Nani Yaakovid and the Eish Menash Shemayim to pick you up and to take you there. It was a lot of Mesiras Nefesh. Okay, and there were no flights out either. There were no flights. It was a dangerous trip. And no one had money. And people had elderly parents and family. We can't second guess anyone. It's nothing is simple. But here, back to our pasuk, we have here, this is a complaint that according to Rashi, the men, we learn, let's just finish up this pasuk, the pasuk over here. We were discussing this point over here, that the halach is a soita.
They said that they should have been nisim when Ezra came to
there. The pasuk says there should have been nisim if they were raised themselves up to an exalted spiritual level.
Shegar
machet,
when
where is that pasuk? Where's the Gemara? I think it's in Sanhedrin. I think it's in Sanhedrin. I think that's so. In Sanhedrin, it was all over. There's Ella that there was. It was destined to be miracles for Klal Yisrael at the Geula Shnia, like equivalent to the miracles that happened at the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim. So why did it not happen? Shagaram Hachit. The people were just not. They were not with the program. They were not. There's always potential for much, much greater things. Unfortunately, it's very hard to take hold, to seize the one. Even when you have an individual that's willing to pave the way, unfortunately, empty cans make a lot of noise. Empty cans make a lot of noise. You have even a few people who are not with the program, and they're vocal, and they scream, and they make a lot of noise, they ruin it for everyone, they take everyone down with them. When you go to an event, you go to a simcha, what happens by you go to a table, go to a wedding? Once upon a time, they have to have weddings, they have real people sitting around the table. Once upon a time, I don't know, today, I don't know, something went wrong. I don't know. Even when you go to a wedding, the weddings are half empty. I went once to a wedding in the summer. Like where's everyone? It's like a wedding that ordinarily, before this whole thing, there would be a lot of people. Where's everyone? somehow everything is something got
COVID.
Yeah, right. That's the answer to everything. That's the answer to everything. But Rahman al-Islam. But when they went, you go to a wedding, there's a table. What happens? You have on the table big, very choshva talmidei chachamim. You can have some very wise people, very smart, wise people. And you have some people that unfortunately did not have an opportunity in life to become, to be educated, to develop. And what is the topic of conversation? It goes to the lowest common denominator. That's what typically happens. People have rabbanim, and you'll have balabatim, educated people, and you'll have people who unfortunately, they want to talk about COVID. So the topic goes down to the lowest common denominator, talking about COVID. Okay, the lowest common denominator, that's what we're talking about. You regurgitate the same thing again, 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 a billion times over, and no chidushin, the lowest common denominator. So that's what happens when it comes to Ruchlius, when it comes to a time when there's a Shasa Kosher, when there's a movement in Klal Yisrael to rise up and bring Mashiach. Unfortunately, there are people that are not interested, and they have a lot of power to bring the level of the Hamoinam to their level. You need people with incredible charisma and conviction to raise everyone up with them, to a Madrega where everyone's together on the same program. It's a very sad reality. Getting back, we have here a woman who's a Saita. She's unfaithful. She's unfaithful to her, or the husband suspects that she is unfaithful. And the truth is, a woman who is a Saita is guilty. She is guilty because the woman does not become called a halachic Saita until you fulfill criteria. Number one, the husband has to see her once. A husband actually witnesses his wife enter into a room alone with a man, with another man. You don't want to do that. What are you doing? What are you going alone into Yichud, to this room with another man? That has to happen. And then he has to say to her, I dare you, I warn you, don't you ever do that again. Don't you ever go into a room alone again like that. That has to be a warning, kinui. And then number three, it has to happen again. She has to violate his command, and she has to go into the room alone with another man, and there are two witnesses that observe this happen. And then, if that happens, he gets upset, he takes her to the Beis Din with the witnesses, and he tells them exactly what happened, that he warned her, and she did not listen. Sure, she had yichud, he warned her not do it again, and she did it again, and now, what? Same one. No, I'm not even sure. And notice, this is the very unique halacha of a Saita. Because in a regular halacha, you do not need to, you don't need to come to a second time. In other words, a person, two witnesses come to a person, they say to him, we're warning you, don't kill him. Do not press the trigger. Do not press the trigger. And if you don't listen to us and you press the trigger, you're going to die, you're also going to die. We're going to testify and you're going to be killed with Misas Beis Din. And he presses the trigger. And he kills someone. So now the witnesses come and they testify, this man, we warned him. We told him what the pasuk is, Lo-Sirtzach. He did not listen. He pressed the trigger. We were witnesses. We didn't blink. We were watching there. We saw what he did and we warned him. And therefore he has to die. So the guy says, wait a minute. Give me a second chance. Give me a second chance. I killed one person. I want a second chance. Just like a Saita gets a second chance. Okay, the Saita, she has to basically do it twice. She goes into the room, and the husband sees her do this, and then don't you ever do it again.
Does he have to have witnesses that he warned her?
Yes, he must have witnesses. The whole Masech the Saita. A Saita has to do it twice. Okay, we give a Saita a second chance. Isn't that amazing? The Saita is given a second chance. When it comes to every other Aveira, Malkois, and Mitzas Beis Din, you don't get a second chance. You do it once, you finish. A Saita is unique. You get a second chance. Yeah. And she lahakas, she disobeys her husband. So then what is Allah? He comes to the Beis and says, oh, we got a Saita. Bring her in. They take her to the Beis HaMikdash. They rip off her clothing. Okay? She was naked, Chazal say. At least from the waist up, she was naked. And that meant all the young Kohanim, Arois, Aroi swim that they want, well, like when they have.
The
machloikas,
if it's the young
or old. What?
The machloikas in Marat, it's the young kahan or
old kahan. The old kahan also have the Yetzirah. The old kahan, that's the old kahan have to leave? Like, you never know, they used to have a yeshiva. Every, unfortunately, every once in a while there was a levi in the yeshiva. So then they had one of the Rosh Yeshivas, one of the Rebbeim, so they had the levi in the yeshiva. They gave all the clap, kahanim arois! Kahanim! So that's what they did when they brought a saita in, kahanim arois! Out! Because it was not tznius. They basically.
The big difference between the Eros and so forth, no one actually saw the Sota do anything except enter
a room. Right.
In
right.
The other cases, they saw an
pull the trigger. Murder. Right. Okay, it's true. That's a difference. That's where you get a second chance. That's true. It's very true. So what do? You take this woman, basically, they go in the mavaz, they take off, they take off some of her clothing, her hair is uncovered. And then they give her to drink, they read a curse to her, they give her the time to confess. And if she does not want to confess, and she's still adamant she did not do anything, so they give her a lot of chances. They write the parsha, they usher the curse, and they give her to drink. And the Torah says one of two things will happen. Either her stomach will explode on the spot, and she will die. Or, if she's innocent, and choshen b'ksherim, then she'll be blessed. And in the future, she will have children. Even if she did not have children until now, she'll have children. She'll have healthy children, beautiful children, smart, all the brachas. Okay, that's, and the, what does the Ramban say? The Ramban says, in the entire Torah, there is no greater miracle than this, the parasha of Saita. The Ramban says shocking words, where Hashem is saying, test me. You test me. I will show you an ultimate miracle. The Ramban says there is no section of the entire Torah that is greater miracle. The Lamala Miderech HaTeva, the Torah says, you give her a drink of water, her stomach explodes? Really? Because she's guilty, without, you know, everything is Al Derech HaTeva in this world.
It's a miracle that the husband takes her back afterwards when she's happy, and he has more children?
Well, but
all along he had a...
It's a very... This parish of Saita obviously came to an end at a very early time in our Jewish history, because there are only a million conditions that have to be fulfilled. In other words, the husband also has to be a real tzaddik. But usually, if the wife is not a tzaddikis, usually it's a two-way street.
But
means
she committed a error. She went into the room. She wasn't supposed to go in the room. She's being rewarded at the end.
Oh, that's a good question.
She can do that on purpose.
So who made that?
Chana,
who asked Akasha? Chana. Rosh Hashanah is coming up. That's a Chazal is. Chazal Chana herself said that. We're having the Chana. On Rosh Hashanah, the Haftorah is Chana, the story of Chana Penina, and she said to Hashem, if you don't, blackmailed Hashem. She blackmailed Hashem, if you're not going to give me a child, I'll make myself into a Saita. I will go into a room alone with another man, and my husband will accuse me, there will be witnesses, he'll take me to the Beis HaMikdash, and then they'll give me to drink, and what's going to happen? It says in the Pasuk, V'nikisa, V'nizra'a, Zera.
Is that learned out from the pasuk, or is that just a...
The Farish pasuk. It's the Farish pasuk. The Nikasa, she'll be innocent.
No, that's about Chana.
Chana, it's a Medrash. It's a Medrash. The Medrash is, she said this to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm giving you an ultimatum, Hashem. Either you give me a child naturally, or I'll make myself into a Saita.
Whoa,
what does that mean? How can you do such a thing? Okay, that's a heavy, heavy...
How could she do the Yisra of Yichud?
What?
How could she do
She violate. How could she violate this Rav Yichud and to go to blackmail Hashem v'nikas of v'nizrazer? That's another topic of discussion, which I don't know. I don't know the answers to all this.
Obviously, it's desperation. Like,
desperation. So what does it mean? Hashem opens up a Pesach to do something like this. What is okay? That's a whole different topic. I don't know. I don't know anything about it.
Does the Avera still stick?
What?
Does the Avera still stick?
I guess it does. So it's isn't it worth it? You get the Avera. How many people hear stories like this all the time in the media, where people are 100% convinced that they're innocent of a crime, and they plead guilty because they don't want to sit in jail their whole life. They make a plea bargain. I'll plead guilty. I'll sit in jail for whatever period of time, but at least after a short period of time, I'll be back to life. Because if I don't plead guilty, they'll lock me away for the rest of my life. But I'm telling you, I don't know if they're right or wrong, but you hear these stories, unfortunately, not so every so often. I'm innocent. I have not done anything wrong. You made about me a bilbo, a crazy story about me. So I don't have a choice. I have to plead guilty in order to just be practical. To be practical, I have children, I have a wife. To be practical, plead guilty. Okay, I even heard once a rav say to someone, it's a shocking thing, is that there was a business and they had a father, and the father was a very old man. Could be he was already in a nursing home. And the children had a very easy way out of the situation to say that their father did it. The government was on to them. Some crime was committed. Some crime, I don't know, it was all Shiloh's, and will they do it, not do it, a whole crazy story. And basically they were in the business with their father. The father was very, very old and sick. And the doctors didn't think the father anyway lived very much longer anyway. Anyway, there would be no consequence because the father's in the nursing home, he's in the hospital. And it was very simple. Just shift the blame on the documents or people who signed the documents, shift the blame to your father and you're done. You go home free, you go home today. And the rabbanim told the person to do this. Just be practical. This whole thing is anyway such a mishigah, such a bilbul, such a bottomless pit. You're in a the chil Hashem anyways is already done deal. And the children said no. He said no. I can't live with that. I cannot live with that. Putting this on my father, he should die with a shame ra. And he didn't. And he sat in jail. He took the hit. He took that, and the Rabbanim told him not to do it. The Rabbanim told him. I don't know all the details, the dirty details, but that was the sekol, that was the shmua that went out in this a long time ago, where they went out in the street. Do I know the details? No. Do I know the whole story? But okay, you got to be practical sometimes. I don't know. Soita is a very complicated sumya. There's an entire mesechta with all of the halachas, all of the hashkafa. Here, Rashi says something that is incredibly powerful. Rashi says, you know why it says here, Mizbeach? It's because this is the Saita. We're dealing here with a woman who is a Saita, where the women are saying, my husband has betrayed me. He has betrayed me. I've done nothing wrong. Ad kedei kach, I'm going to make myself into a Saita. This is really what it's saying to a certain degree. I'll go to the Beis HaMikdash. We'll go to the Mizbeach and we're going to cry like a Saita. Why come to the Beis HaMikdash? Go to Shul. No, because the only place where they do the service of a Saita is in the Beis HaMikdash. This is what Rashi says. It's a powerful thing over here, what Rashi was saying. Hinnu lifnei HaMizbeach lihi bodek ki Saitais. We present ourselves in the Beis HaMikdash like Saitas. Next. Me'ein oy penois ad she'enchem kedai she'efne el minchaschem v'lokachas ritzim yedchem. To the degree where, so he's Rashi saying, not like the Mitzudah Stavid. The Mitzudah Stavid learned that the tears are covering the Mizbech literally, and the Mizbech is flooded. So if you put an animal on the Mizbech, it's just going to flow. It's like a stream, just going to fall off onto the floor. That's not what it says over here. Here it says is that it's not Kedai. Okay, that's a very yeshivish word in today's language. Rashi, Dibram, Me'ein Oid Pinois.
Which pasuk?
Pasuk Yud Gimel in Rashi, on the left side in this column, Me'ein Oid Pinois, add, these women are coming, they're crying, She'ein Chem Kedai, you, the men who are committed these crimes, you're no longer worthy.
Right.
She'efne, that I Hashem shall turn and accept your korbanos el min chaschem v'lokachas ritzim yedchem. It's not Hashem is saying they're right and you're wrong. You have betrayed them. You do not find them favorable in your eyes. You married another wife. These women are now, they're just sidelined. They come to the Beis Hamikdash. Mo'ovel motzavi. What did we do wrong? And Hashem says they're right. They're right, and therefore, you men who have betrayed these women, don't come to the Beis HaMikdash and bring korbanos. It's not kedai. Okay, that's a very, today in our language, that's like simen muvok, you're too yeshivish, if you say the word kedai. But Chazal uses this word very often. Kedai means worthy. Hashem says, you men, you're low lives. It's not worthy that your korbanos, your korbanos should be offered before me. Anoka, anoka, loshon anoka. Loshon of anocha means agmas nefesh, to express yourself. Sha'adam mitzta'er b'liboy, a person cries. Fine. V'av l'chulam, what is the thought of all these expressions?
Hey, wait a second.
Yeah?
You skipped the French part.
Oh, yeah, okay, I'm sorry. I got lazy.
Demon is mon, which he translates as groaning, which is anocha, but if you can hear in the word, moaning. You know.
Moaning and groaning. Demoni, how do you say it in Demoni Sha, Belaz. To moan and groan, the avlechulam he onek doim, to cry out quietly. Doim is quietly. Someone actually told this to me 2 days ago, very fascinating idea, that there are four, the word doim, and they really, it's a hashkach, they told this to Imam, now I understand this pasuk. The word, these two words, is an oxymoron. It doesn't make sense. Doi means silence. And the word he'onek means quiet. Vayidoim aharon. Aharon was silent. And the word he'onek means to moan. Oh, sigh, an expression. So therefore, the word he'onek, it means sound. So these two words are a contradiction to one another. Doim is silent and he'onek means to cry. How do we reconcile these two words together? So someone told me something 2 days ago, which really I was actually thinking about this, really, really, really shook me up. We know there are four levels in this world. Four levels. Everyone must fit into one of four categories. You know, it's like the joke I always tell you 1,000 times. There are three types of people in this world. Everyone in this world can be broken down into three categories. Those who know how to count and those who do not. I told you that joke many times.
Yeah, yeah.
You used to laugh when I told you that joke. You don't laugh anymore. You don't laugh anymore. Mark, you get the joke?
I tell that joke to a lot of people and they don't understand.
They don't say, oh, yeah. That's a bad sign. Mark, you don't get the joke?
Yeah, it's too.
You don't, Mark, get it. Mark, everyone in this world fits into one of three categories.
Three.
Three categories.
Oh, those who know how to count
and those who don't know how to count.
Obviously,
I don't know how to count.
Right.
It's a self-deprecating joke. Like, I'll tell you another quick joke. Another thing is that if I would get a quarter. You are the Machol. This came from a Machol. I read this yesterday on the emails. It's a Machol's joke. Everyone already read the emails. If I would get a quarter for every smart thing that I ever said, I would have 2 dimes.
Joe said it, right?
Yep.
Who said that?
Joe the cartoon
said.
That's even better. That joke is even better than the one that I said before.
These jokes are like no soap radio.
No,
self-deprecating humor is always the best.
I'll tell you a third joke.
Yeah.
When a person ages, three things happen. One thing is he forgets things, and the other two I don't remember.
There's a lot of that in the right there.
Okay, so here, this is the var. There are four types of categories. It's a very profound idea. There is doimim, which means the earth, stones. Then there is the tzomeach, things that blossom. Then there is the chai, the living. And then there is the medaber. Why do we call the highest level the medaber? The answer will explain. What is this, a doimim? Why do we describe inanimate objects as objects that are silent, and other objects chay tzmech medaber? The answer is, every single object in this world has life. Even a stone, it's alive. You have perek shira. In perek shira, you have the Chazal put psukim, expressions of shevach. That every single entity expresses to Hashem, whether it's the moon, as far as we know, is just a big stone. What is the moon? It's a big stone that's just an asteroid that we have to hope doesn't come crashing down on us. What is the sun? These are, you know, they talk, and yet Chazal, trees, they talk. Chazal put into every single object in this world dibur. A stone, people look at a stone, it's dead. There's no, it's not true. That's sheker. A stone is alive. There is a living spirit in the stone. The only thing is the stone does not express itself. The stone is alive. There's a chias in that stone. And what do you mean there's a chias? It does things. It actually, it follows orders. It serves Hashem. When Hashem said to the stone, when Hashem, Moshe hit the rock, water came out. Moshe was told to speak to the rock. The rock is no different than any other person. The only unique feature about a rock is its dome. It's a domain. It serves Hashem silently. Then there is a tzomeach. The etzem tzmicha is a koyach of dibur. For example, when they put the mata aron in the kodesh hakodashim, vayotzeitz perach, vayotzeitz tzitz, vayigmol shkedim. This was an expression that aron is the bechir Hashem. This was a dibur. The tzmicha is a dibur. The second level is tzomeach. Tzomeach. Aaron's mata was put in the earth. And just like the mata Aaron that was put in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it spoke. It expressed itself. It took all the matas, all of the shvatim, put them down, and the only one that blossomed, vayotzei ferech, vayotzei tzitz, vayigmol shkedim, was the mata Aaron. It expressed itself. That's an expression of communication. There's a communication. It didn't just serve Hashem. It serves Hashem through communication. And then there's the chai. The chai is the more sophisticated form of communication. A chai, animals, they actually do things. They are in the Chazal, the nachash was an evet for Adam HaRishon. All living creatures, they this little we have to find, I'm sure you can find a chorus for this to bring out, is that their motion, their actual life is a service to Hashem. And then there's the ultimate service is the medaber. We don't call Adam a sophisticated living person who has das. We call the highest form a medaber, which basically means all four levels, the focus is on the dibur. On the dibur is communication. Each one of these levels has a different mode of communication. A person of das, he communicates with sophisticated speech. An animal communicates through its motion, through its actions, through its behavior. Tzomeach communicates to the way it sprouts and blossoms. In Esroi, coming to Sukkot soon, is what is an Esroi? It's the Tzomeach. It's unique among all of the trees because its fruit comes before its leaves. Chazal compared Nasav and Ishma to a tapuach. A tapuach, according to this context, means an Esroi. The matapuach, the perioi, the fruit comes before the leaves. All other fruits, all other items of tzmicha, their leaves come first, and then the fruits come first. And esrog, the fruit comes first, and then the leaves. Now, what does that mean scientifically? That's another story. That's another topic of discussion, exactly what that means, because the fact is that in esrog, the leaves do come first. So what it means, sensei, is that when the winter comes, if you don't harvest the esrog, so the leaves dry up, they fall off the tree, but the esrog remains, and next year it's still there, so the esrog will precede the leaves that will come the second year. That is a unique form of expression. Being that tzmicha is an expression, the fact that the esrog blossoms in the most unique way possible, where the fruit comes before the leaves, that means that the esrog has a different koyach hadibur, a different form of communication. Animals, every animal makes sounds. Maybe that's what it means, the sounds. Okay, the Gemara has a whole list of words for the neigh of the horse, And in English, we have also, I don't remember the Chazal, but in English, every single creature, in the English language, there's a different term used to describe the sound that the animal makes.
And in every language, that sound differs.
Differs, and in Lashon HaKodesh, the same thing. Lashon HaKodesh, Chazal have given a different term for every sound. That's Dibur. That's a Dibur. What about the rock? The rock, the way it's doing, it's quiet. It doesn't mean it's not alive. It doesn't mean that it's aware, that it has a life force in it. It has the same life force in a rock that a tree has, and a chai, and an adam. It's just a question of the mode of the communication. It speaks through silence. Everyone knows the expression, your silence, the silence is deafening. This mode of communication of a doinim is its silence. That is a communication in various forms. The rock is a living organism. The proof is Moshe hit the rock, word came out. Hashem told Moshe, say please to the rock. Talk to the rock. You should talk to the rock. Well, the rock is going to listen to me. Yeah, the rock is listening. The rock is listening. So what is
surf side fell down.
What?
Surf side, the concrete squeaked and gave warning.
Okay, that's a squeak. Okay, that's not correct.
Someone heard it.
What?
People heard it.
Heard supernatural things? No, no.
I don't know.
It shifted.
So here, now I understand it's much more meaningful what Rashi says. Hey onek doin. Hey onek means cry. Cry, you're alive.
Yeah,
but the cry is a cry of doim, of silence. In being quiet, when vayidoim arum, what does it mean in arum? He was stoic, like no big deal. My two sons just died, couldn't kill us. Is that what it means?
Yeah.
Like,
he was overwhelmed. He couldn't
sleep. Oh, and so where was his dibur? It was his deeper was deafening. Not speechless. See, that's the point. It's not speechless. The silence is the deeper. Aaron by Yidamar. So you take the passage in the Balabatasha Mahalach. Aaron was given the worst news any parent could ever in his wildest dream imagine. I don't care. What do I care? This world is just a prozda to Olam Haba, have emuna. You go for that stuff. just, you know, well, who cares? This world is just, it's nothing. It doesn't bother me one bit. Ashrei Yosheve Secha. Really? Come on. Wake up. That's not. But it says, Vayidem Aram. Quiet. No. His silence was deafening. There is a mode of communication in silence that says more than any word can possibly say. When it's done with the right way, with the right emotion and the right understanding, there are four levels of items in this world. Doimen, Tsemeach, Chai, and Medaber. An Adam has the blessing that is sophisticated Koyach Adim. An animal, they all make sounds. What are those sounds? Those sounds capture who they are. It's not for nothing the Chazal give a different term to describe the sound of each creature. Each sound describes the frustration and the joy of every creature. Arye shag milo yira. Now in Chodesh Elul. Chodesh Elul, the mazel. Okay, Elul is mazel b'sula. But the pasuk is Arye shag milo yira. Arye is Rosh Tevos Elul. Reish is Rosh Hashanah, Yod is Yom HaKippurim, and He is Hoshana Rabba. You're now in the Yimei Hadin. Arye Shoag, Milo Yira, the Shoag, it's an expression. Like all the Bali Musa say, you go to the Bronx Zoo, and they take you to the lions, and you see the lions roaring. Are you scared? Anyone scared when you go to the Bronx Zoo and you see the lions roaring? Are you scared? Let's see you wake him up. Throw something, they'll put you in jail though. go and throw, go try to provoke the lion, and go, you know, try to provoke, and they go, there's a sweat. Anyone gets scared? Everyone's laughing. All the kinderlach are all laughing. You know why they're all laughing? Because there's a mechitza shel barzel that's mafsek between the lion and us. There's a mechitza shel barzel. When you take away the mechitza shel barzel, open up the gates. Open the gates. And then the lion roars, oh boy, you're in a lot of trouble. No one's laughing anymore. No one's laughing anymore. Arye Shoah, the Milo Yira, there's a Kaycha Dibur. The roar of a lion captures what the lion is. The hissing of the snake makes noise, a snake. Okay, there's an expression Chazal used for that snake. You know, it speaks volumes. What is this creature? A sleazy, low life, literally. The snake. Okay, every animal has Kaycha Dibur. Tzmicha, something which grows from the ground. Look at what happened by Aaron. Look at these two examples we've given. Vayotze ferach, vayotze tzitz, vayigmol shkedim. They made a statement. Aaron is in charge, not Korach, and not all the other chevre here. Aaron is in charge. Esrog, it has a different form of communication. The esrog, its fruit, comes, blossoms before its leaves. And now comes the most profound of them all, the doime. The doime also speaks. It speaks volumes, it speaks encyclopedias. Its words are deafening because its mode of communication is in vayidoim. And now, again, that's the appreciation of hey onek, cry. Cry in a state of doim, in a state of silence. You look at the person, you see it all, right? A person, Rachman Litzlan. You know, you walk in, Madu ponecho rohim hayoim. Yosef, he walks into the dungeon, he sees all the people there, all the sahamashim. Did they say one word to him? Not one word. He looks at their face. It's written all over their face what they have to say. Madua ponecho rohim hayom. Your presence, your ponim, speaks volumes. Okay, the im anoka l'shoyim tzaka heichonad mama. So here he's saying, okay, what is it? What is it? So Rashi over here says that's what it means over here. It's bili boy. Vanoka is l'shoyim tzaka heichonad mama. V'targumo dimidankin. The targum of this word is dimidankin, which means l'shoyim of which. The anaka is dimi damkin, which I'm assuming comes from the word doim. Doim. The letters dalid, mem dalid, the letters are reversed. The letters are reversed. Dimi damkin. What does it say there? What does it say in the sigh? V'chein tirgem unikotosem bifnechem. It says that you're going to cry out. Bifnechem, with your ponim.
Within yourself.
Yourself. The same exact targum. Visi dankun. Dalid, here it's visi those. I'm sorry, the shorish, I made a mistake. Dalid nun is the shorish. Dalun kuf. L'shoyn Adam hanoyheim. So he's telling us what this word means in Aramaic. A person that noheim, that moans,
or roars.
Roars u'mitzta'er ba'atzmai, and he has pain, ba'atzmai, internal pain. Internal pain. Okay, so therefore, L'maskan, let's review the pasuk. L'maskan, what do we learn over here today? This one pasuk of Rashi. Pasuk here says, V'zosh sheinis tasu, you have committed a second sin. To review very quickly, according to Rashi, the second sin is, in addition to men, single men, marrying one wife, non-Jewish women, you commit even a worse avera. The married men who are married to Jewish women, they're married, they're taking a second wife that's not Jewish, and by doing so, you are betraying your Jewish wife. The women come to the base to the mizbech. Why do they come to the mizbech according to Rashi? Because they say, what is wrong with us? What avla have we done to you? Did we not burn your food every night? What do we do to you? What do you have against us? We did something against you? Test us, like a soita. They come to the Mizbeach. And Hashem says, they come to the Mizbeach Hashem with Lichiv Anaka. And Hashem now says, according to Rashi, they're right. Hashem here is coming to validate their complaint and to say these women are right, they have been abused, and therefore you men, get out of here. I don't want to see from you Karbonos Me'ain Oid Pinos. Rashi's words, it's not kedai for you men anymore to bring me Karbonos, to turn Ala Mincha Ulakachas Rasam Yetchem, not like the Mitzudas David, who said that the covering of the Mizbeach, the Shenis, is in addition to being mevazel the mizbeach with balim women, you also betray your wives, and they come and they cry, and there's a flood on the mizbeach of their tears to the point where there's no room anymore to put on the mizbeach any korbanos and take anything from them. All right, we're going to stop over here, take a short break, and afterwards I want to do a little bit more about shofar, and maybe after shofar we'll do something about to dip the apple in the honey.
Is this your personal
one? Yes, that's my personal one. Whatever.
Whatever.
It doesn't matter, it's all the same anyway.
Mashman from Rashi.
Yeah.